This Morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another milestone. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Wednesday, May 26th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Federal officials now say half of U.S. adults have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Meanwhile, Moderna is seeking expanded use for its shot.
On the anniversary of George Floyd's death, a look at how reforming police policies has become a political battle.
Manhattan prosecutors have convened a special grand jury in their probe of former President Trump and his company after a multi-year investigation.
And thinking differently about a January 6th riot commission, what are the consequences of not forming one?
I do think that the question of what happens if you don't do it has probably gotten too little attention. There's a lot of focus, obviously, on what if you have a commission, what would the political consequences be? But there's also kind of a national question of what happens if you don't do it, what does that leave lingering and unanswered on the table? And
Jerry Seib at the Wall Street Journal on a different question to ask as lawmakers negotiate a riot commission to study the events at the U.S. Capitol 4 months ago. President Biden met yesterday with the family of George Floyd to mark the first anniversary of his killing. At the same time, lawmakers in Washington are still working on police overhaul legislation. Mr. Biden huddled privately with Mr. Floyd's brothers, daughter, and other family members 5 weeks after Derek Chauvin, a former Minneapolis police officer, was convicted of murder charges in the death of Mr. Floyd. Philonis Floyd is one of Mr. Floyd's brothers.
It's a pleasure just to be able to have the chance to meet with him when we have that opportunity, too. We're just thankful for what's going on, and we just want this George Floyd Policing Act to be passed in the future.
Mr. Biden initially had called on members of Congress to pass legislation aimed at overhauling the police system by the anniversary of Mr. Floyd's death. Negotiators on Capitol Hill are working to overcome disagreements between the two parties over whether a potential compromise should make it easier to bring civil suits against law enforcement officers. Well, George Floyd's death at the hands of Minneapolis police rocked nearly every facet of American life, right? Entertainment, academia, politics, corporate culture, even conversations at the dinner table. 1 year later, the law enforcement community is still grappling with the fallout that has thrown the future of policing into uncertainty. It's a story by Sarah Westwood, investigative reporter at the Washington Examiner. Sarah, what are you hearing?
Well, Gordon, we sort of walked through the different ways that policing has been politicized in the year since George Floyd's obviously tragic death. There were a lot of side effects in society to that, but one of them is that public perception of law enforcement has absolutely plummeted. There was a Gallup poll taken at the end of last summer, obviously a summer of protests, a summer of unrest, where public confidence in police dropped below 50% for the first time in the history that question had been asked in nearly three decades. So it was really an enormous eroding of trust in police. That coincided with the demands from the Black Lives Matter movement that really exploded after Floyd's death, to defund the police and to redirect resources that were going to city police departments to other things. In a number of progressive cities, that actually happened. In Portland and Seattle and other places, there were significant cuts made to police forces. Now, you fast forward to today, and you're seeing a very significant spike in violent crime in cities around the country. And that is the backdrop for this conversation now about police reform at the federal level.
We're speaking with Sarah Westwood, investigative reporter at the Washington Examiner. Her piece is called George Floyd Anniversary, How His Death Turned Policing into a Political Battle. You said, too, there were complaints that police departments were sending cops to deal with certain issues like mental health that they were not prepared to handle. Has that changed at all?
Right. And this is one of the criticisms from the left that Democrats have brought up, which is that police are often stretched so thin. They're responding to all sorts of incidents, not just crime, but also, as you mentioned, mental health incidents, dealing with drug addicts in these cities that they're not necessarily all equipped to handle. And they might not have even been trained properly to deal with. And so one of the more serious suggestions of how to put defund the police into practice is to redirect some of those funds into other social services. The problem is, though, that you could leave the actual police without the resources they need to perform the public safety component of their job. And so that debate continues to be ongoing. And then the policing reform conversation on Capitol Hill here in Washington does have to do with training and individual police departments, but it's really coming down to the kinds of legal protections that police officers can expect to have if they get dragged into court for having a misstep on the job, and also what kinds of uses of force are going to be allowed from the federal level, such as chokeholds. Those are things that would likely be banned under a police reform bill.
Can that police reform bill get passed, Sarah, in some way, shape, or form? Any feel for that?
We are starting to see momentum on that front. GOP Senator Tim Scott leading the negotiations from the Republican side. He had a proposal last year that Democrats blocked on the grounds that it didn't go far enough. And I think you have started to hear some regret from Democrats. They didn't take the opportunity back then to do at least something. Now, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act is what the Democrats have put forward. It has already passed the House. But there are some things in there that Republicans don't like, and that legal protection issue, what's known as qualified immunity, or whether an individual police officer can be sued for his own money in court if he violates someone's civil rights. That is at the heart of that debate. And the Republican proposal, the Republican compromise, if you will, looks to be that individual police departments could possibly be held liable in civil court under an agreement, but not individual police officers, like what Democrats want to do.
Yeah. So one of the things you pointed out in the story was the hypocrisy of progressives. Explain that.
Well, it was sort of one storyline about the police reform discussion that some of the progressives who were most loudly trumpeting the defund the police rhetoric that sprung out of the Black Lives Matter movement were also relying on police when they were traveling to various places where the debate was happening, were also shelling out lots of money to pay for their own private security, which was just one of the many ironies of this debate.
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Westwood, investigative reporter at the Washington Examiner. New numbers from the CDC show half of U.S. adults are now fully vaccinated against COVID-19. That's more than 129 million people in the U.S., 18 years and older. Health authorities, of course, want to vaccinate as many people as possible in the U.S., children and adults, in order to fully move past the pandemic. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky emphasized that unvaccinated people remained at risk and needed to continue to wear a mask and abide by social distancing guidelines.
Our 7-day average is 22,877 cases per day. This represents yet another decrease of about 25% from the prior 7-day average.
Other stats, 25 states in the District of Columbia have fully vaccinated 50% or more of their adult population. In 9 states, at least 70% of the adult population has gotten at least one dose. Infections, hospitalizations, and deaths have steadily declined. Meanwhile, Moderna said yesterday it would ask health regulators to permit adolescent use of its vaccine because a study found it worked safely. Coming up next, latest on the probe into the Trump Organization. It's Small Business Month, and Dell Technologies and Windows are celebrating your unstoppable drive. Save up to 45% on powerful PCs with Windows 10 Pro to work from anywhere. Plus top monitors and docks for the ultimate business setup, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right business tech, server, storage, and cloud solutions at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL for Small Business Month savings. Thanks for spending part of your Wednesday with us. Prosecutors in New York have convened a special grand jury in their investigation of former President Trump and his company. The move indicates that the office is seeking indictments following a multi-year investigation into the Trump Organization and its officers. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance has said the office is investigating possible bank, tax, or insurance fraud We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The investigation has centered around financial dealings before Mr. Trump became president at several properties, including an estate north of New York City, Manhattan buildings, including Trump Tower and 40 Wall Street, and a Chicago hotel. Prosecutors have also subpoenaed information about perks like tuition payments, cars, and apartments that Trump Organization employees may have received. Mr. Trump said in a statement yesterday that this is a continuation of the greatest witch hunt in American history, adding, "Our country is broken." Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Special grand juries, by the way, typically sit for at least several months compared with regular grand juries that are impaneled for about a month. Special grand juries often hear multiple complex cases such as white-collar investigations. 19 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Biden and Russia's Vladimir Putin have agreed to meet next month in Geneva. A face-to-face encounter the White House hopes will help improve a fraught relationship. The June 16th summit is being tacked on to the end of Biden's first international trip as president. The agenda is expected to include discussion of Russian action in neighboring Ukraine and this week's forced diversion of a Lithuania-bound flight by Russian ally Belarus.
Number two.
A family-friendly street festival, musical performances, and moments of silence were held yesterday to honor George Floyd and mark of 1 year since he died at the hands of Minneapolis police. Rodney Floyd was among the members of George's family who met in Washington with President Biden and Vice President Harris.
Today is about the remembrance of our brother George Floyd, father, uncle, friend, cousin.
Floyd's family is urging Congress to quickly pass a law in Floyd's name that would bring changes to policing.
Number three.
A Black Hawk helicopter used for firefighting with four people aboard crashed into a Florida marsh yesterday afternoon, killing at least one occupant. Leesburg Police Captain Joseph Iozzi says one occupant was confirmed dead, but emergency responders were not hopeful of finding any survivors.
The tail actually went onto the airport runway area, while the body, main body of the helicopter, went into the wooded swampy area, which is making it difficult for rescue crews to get back to.
An unspecified mechanical failure was believed to have caused the crash. For much of the South, midsummer-like heat will peak today, bringing the greatest chance to break daily record highs. More than 70 daily heat records may be broken as a high-pressure system dominates the eastern half of the country. Parts of the Southeast could stay hot through the end of the week. Well, if you're a parent of a young teen, this will either make you laugh or cry. Researchers advise young teens to only devote 1 hour on school days to recreational internet and video games. The study from Rutgers University researchers surveyed Chinese middle schoolers over a multi-year span and found that those who reported playing more than 1 hour on school days and more than 4 hours on weekends tended to have lower grades, a higher tendency to skip school, and a greater chance of feeling bored in class.
Uh-oh. Thanks, Jen. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now, there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. Anyone who's ever run low on gas without knowing whether there's a gas station nearby knows what it's like to drive an electric car that's low on battery power. That condition, known as range anxiety, could soon be eradicated. President Biden is proposing a massive investment in electric car charging stations. Without more of them, the popularity of electric vehicles may remain limited. It's a story by Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. Nathan, where are we currently with charging stations?
Well, right now we only have about 40 to 50,000 stations throughout the country. And, you know, there's 120,000, 130,000 gas stations throughout the country. So when you look at it like that, we need a lot more electric car charging stations to get to a point where we would have enough to really transition from gas vehicles to electric vehicles. But actually, we need a lot more than the number of gas stations, because EVs can't be filled up as quickly as gas, at least not yet. And that's one reason why they have not taken off quite yet. But, you know, there's this belief that if we end up installing more chargers, then more EVs will be sold. It's sort of like, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah. I was surprised too. There's this one woman you talked to who's in the Atlanta area, right? She bought an apartment or rented one just because it had a public charging station in that complex.
Yeah, and I think that that's actually not unusual. When you look at the numbers, you know, the people basically say that they are going to be much more likely to buy an EV as soon as there are more chargers available. In fact, it's the number one reason why people don't buy electric vehicles, is because at least there's a perception that there is not, you know, charging availability around them. Now, here's what's unusual. The most people are going to do most of their charging at home. So you actually don't really need to charge in public that often. But I think what we need to do is to install chargers to give people the confidence that if they're out and they do need to charge while they're out and driving, then they can do that.
Yeah. And it was interesting too, because you mentioned that most people charge, was it 80%, either charge at home or at work or a combination. But not everyone has a garage either.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, though. Let's say your car gets, right now, the average EV is probably going to get between 150 to 300 miles on a charge. So, you know, unless you have a mammoth commute to the office or you do a lot of other driving that day, chances that you're going to run out of battery in a given day are pretty low. But if you're doing a trip, then, you know, you might actually need to charge along the way. So you have to plan your route accordingly. And the idea here is that the more charging stations there are, the less planning people have to do. If you think about it, like, you usually don't really have to worry about, is there a gas station near me in case you're out? I mean, there's almost always one pretty close, unless you're driving out west or something.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I mean, but the fact is that charging at home isn't necessarily an option for everybody. So, you know, if you park on the street, for example, you're probably not going to be able to charge at home. So there are all kinds of factors at play here.
We're speaking with Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. His piece is called More Electric Car Charging Stations Are Needed to Juice Electric Vehicle Sales. Explain what President Biden has proposed.
Well, this is part of his infrastructure package, you know, the couple trillion dollars that he wants to spend on infrastructure throughout the country, roads, bridges, and he's including EVs as part of that. Now, I know that that's somewhat controversial among Republicans, but Democrats are supporting this because they perceive this as critical to fighting climate change and ultimately to helping transition the country away from gas. And, you know, so the 500,000 stations would be installed as part of this package. That would basically be 10 times as many as we have now. The question is, where would they go?
Thanks, Nathan. Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
Cutting through the clutter to bring you the people and stories that matter to you. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday, May 26. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Half of U.S. adults are now fully vaccinated. Prosecutors convene a special grand jury in their probe of former President Trump. Georgia Congressman Buddy Carter has proposed a bill that would prevent discretionary federal funds from going to states that provide assistance to illegal immigrants. Cleveland pitcher Zach Plesac is out with a broken thumb after he aggressively ripped off his shirt in the locker room. And what a drug dealer did with his second chance from a judge. That story in about 20 minutes. A report says senators are struggling to salvage a bill that would create a commission to probe the riot at the U.S. Capitol back in January. A story by The Hill says moderates in both caucuses are trying to find a path forward, but those efforts are producing little movement among GOP senators. Meanwhile, arriving at the right answer often starts with asking the right question. That rule
is worth pondering as the Senate this week considers whether to approve creation of that commission to investigate the riot at the Capitol by a mob of Trump supporters. The main question that will be debated is, what will happen if such a panel is created? Jerry Seib, executive editor at the Wall Street Journal, says the better question may be, what will happen if one is not? Jerry, your take.
Well, you know, I do think that the question of what happens if you don't do it has probably gotten too little attention. There's a lot of focus, obviously, on what if you have a commission? What would the political consequences be? But there's also kind of a national question of what happens if you don't do it. What does that leave lingering and unanswered on the table? And what does it say about the political system's ability or willingness to come to terms with a very painful event like the riots on January 6th at the Capitol? And you know what, if there is no commission, it doesn't mean the subject's going to go away. There are going to be congressional hearings. There are going to be dozens, potentially even hundreds of trials of people who went into the Capitol and created mayhem on that day. And there'll be a lot of information that comes out through the legal system, and there'll be congressional hearings, and there'll be journalism committed. People will continue to investigate this in news organizations. But I think that one of the things that will happen if that Washington can't agree to form a commission in a bipartisan or nonpartisan way is that I think it will be illustrating that, you know, the political system today is still suffering from severe partisanship, rampant mistrust of the other side, a willingness to question election results. And in a way, the failure to have a commission, I think, runs the risk that the very behaviors that produced January 6th could be repeated.
All right. So the hesitancy among Republicans, in your eyes, to have this commission is what?
Well, I think that there's it's twofold. The first is they are afraid Democrats will simply turn the commission into a club to beat up Republicans about the role that various Republican leaders, starting obviously with former President Trump, played in inciting the violence on January 6th. And I think that they're afraid that it will roll into 2022 elections and be used against the party at that time and be used for political purposes as opposed to national healing purposes. But as they point out, that's the kind of concern was present in the past when similar commissions were created. But I think the decision in those cases was it was more important for the nation to go ahead and deal with those risks. I also think that the other answer to those Republican concerns, which I think are legitimate, have to do with the way the commission would be structured and how it would be operated. And there are ways to address those concerns in the functioning of a commission, I think.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. He's written a piece about how if Washington's political system can't come together, it may be showing it can't reverse the dynamics that produced violence in the first place. So you referenced past commissions regarding the JFK assassination and 9/11. Kind of bring those together here with the January 6th one.
Sure. And I think this is important context because, you know, I think you could make the case that the most traumatic days in the last 60 years in this country were the day President John Kennedy was shot and the day of the 9/11 attacks and January 6th. They all had similar shocks, delivered similar shocks to the system and had similar national implications and long-lasting repercussions. In both the Kennedy assassination case and the 9/11 case, obviously, there were big nonpartisan commissions created like the one that's being debated now for January 6th. And I think in the case of the Warren Commission, the question about the Kennedy assassination was what happened. And in the 9/11 Commission case, the question about the terrorist attacks on 9/11 was why did this happen or how did this happen? And I think those questions would be on the table for a January 6th commission. But as I said, you know, people look back on both of those and think they were successful, but it was not a sure thing. And they were also wrapped up in political controversy at the outset. President Lyndon Johnson didn't want the Warren Commission initially because he was afraid if it found Cuba or the Soviet Union was responsible for the Kennedy assassination, it could literally lead to nuclear war, and he wasn't sure he wanted to run that risk. And there was political risk surrounding the 9/11 Commission from people who were afraid they or their party or people they worked with or for could be blamed for not preparing the nation better for a terrorist attack. But in both cases, I think The cooler heads decided that answering questions and alleviating national concerns were those were the steps that were more important than worrying too much about the risks.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness? We're all dealing with a lot right now. I'm sure you feel the same kind of added stress I do. Then you should know about BetterHelp. BetterHelp isn't a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Start communicating in under 48 hours. Schedule weekly or monthly phone or video sessions or whatever works for you. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. That's why there's a special offer for This Morning with Gordon Deal listeners. 10% off your first month. Visit BetterHelp.com/Gordon. That's BetterHelp.com/Gordon. And join the over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. That's 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you know, when it's time to clean out your car, you'll often come across some spare change under the mats. A young boy in Indiana did a lot better than that when he looked under the mats of his family's new SUV. 9-year-old Landon Melvin was cleaning out his family's Chevy Suburban when he found an envelope under a floor mat that contained $5,000 in cash. The boy told his father about the discovery in the vehicle, which the family had purchased in September of last year, but his dad had a difficult time believing him at first. The Melvins then contacted the previous owners of the SUV, a South Carolina family. The family told them they had driven the Suburban to Florida for a cruise in 2019 and had misplaced the envelope of money during the trip. The money was returned, but the family insisted that Landon keep $1,000 of the money as a finder's fee.
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
A little detective work by a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
Nets you $1,000.
Right, but what was the deal with this family driving to Florida with $5,000
yes.
in cash in an envelope?
Yes.
I mean, you don't need to carry that much cash on a cruise, I don't think. I think there are other ways to, swiping cards
yeah.
and the like. You mm-hmm. know, normally you don't carry pretty much any cash on a cruise, I don't think, these days. So that seemed a little bit strange.
Does seem a little bit puzzling. And what kind of job did you do searching the car?
Right. Didn't even look under the mat.
Yeah. That yeah. wasn't a very thorough search.
Kind of gave it a quick glance. I can't find it. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe $5,000 is not a lot of money, these folks.
I think you're right. There are a lot of follow-up questions that need to be asked and answered here.
How did we get to this point?
Mm-hmm.
And if you've managed to get together with family for a birthday celebration over the past year, you've no doubt encountered this moment. The birthday person goes to blow out the candles on their cake and either pulls back in order to not spread their saliva all over the cake, or they just go full force while onlookers cringe. Enter a Virginia man who says he spent his free time during the COVID-19 pandemic and that allowed him to work on an invention that coincidentally involves stopping germs, a device that allows birthday candles to be blown out without spittle flying all over. Mark Appelt said he came up with the idea for the Blowsy birthday cake candle extinguisher while at a child's birthday party before the pandemic. Appelt designed the Blowsy, which allows children to still use their own lungs to blow, but the air that travels over the cake doesn't come from their lungs, but rather from a fan attached to the end of the device. Appelt said the Blowsy was such a hit with the kids and parents at a local birthday party that he's now selling his invention online.
How about that?
Yeah.
So I looked it up. Goes for about $10 on Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of cool, I guess. Sort of. Kind of.
I'm just wondering, like, is there a thing where people get sick from eating birthday cake in which spittle has landed on?
Well, again,
I don't think so.
Are not things we thought about that much before the pandemic.
True.
But if you're in a room full of strangers, a birthday party for your kids with a bunch of strangers around, it's something you might perhaps think about more often. That's
all right.
All I'm saying.
Maybe you do think about that.
You think about it. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen.
As a business owner, you eventually realize you can't do everything yourself, but hiring is complicated. And what if you only need part-time help? Belay, an innovative staffing solution, has successfully matched thousands of businesses with part-time virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and social media strategists. Belay offers you a virtual support team that can transform your workday. Let Belay help you juggle less and accomplish more. Just go to Belay, B-E-L-A-Y, solutions.com/deal. That's Belay Solutions. .com/deal.
Thanks for being with us. Thinking about a car for a new college grad, MarketWatch put together a mix of new and used cars and SUVs that can be had for under $25,000 and achieve a combined fuel economy rating of at least 30 miles a gallon. Number one, the 2021 Chevy Trailblazer, now an affordable subcompact crossover starting at just under $21,000. Number two, the 2018 Ford Focus. The used compact can be had for around $13,000 and comes as a sedan or hatchback. Number three, the 2017 or 2018 Honda Civic keeps its value, and you can find it for between $15,000 and $18,000 in a sedan, coupe, or hatch. Number four, the 2018 to 2020 Hyundai Kona, small SUV with eye-catching paint choices like Lime Twist or Surf Blue. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Half of U.S. adults are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, a sign of the nation's progress in fighting the pandemic. More than 129 million people 18 years and older have been vaccinated, White House coronavirus advisor Andy Slavitt.
25 states in the District of Columbia have fully vaccinated 50% or more of their adult population. In 9 states... have recently crossed the threshold of 70% of adults with at least one shot.
The now successful campaign has left behind the supply constraints and other problems that marred its start.
Number two.
The family of George Floyd met with President Biden, Vice President Harris, and congressional leaders yesterday to mark 1 year since the killing of Floyd in Minneapolis police custody. Republican Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina took part in the meeting.
They were making the kind of progress that we need to make, and I'm happy that the family stop by.
Lawmakers on Capitol Hill, though, let the anniversary of Floyd's murder pass without coming to a deal on policing legislation in his honor.
Number three.
New York prosecutors have convened a special grand jury to consider evidence in a criminal investigation into former President Trump's business dealings. The developments signal that the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is moving towards seeking charges as a result of its 2-year investigation, which included a lengthy legal battle to obtain Trump's tax records. The office is probing a variety of matters, such as hush money payments paid to women on Trump's behalf, property valuations, and employee compensation. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. will continue to consult with Israel over Iran nuclear talks.
The first thing we're trying to achieve is to, as I said, put the nuclear problem back into the box that we constructed and that was strong, solid, and doing what we needed to do.
Blinken today is visiting Egypt and Jordan, which have acted as mediators in the conflict between Israel and Hamas militants. The Back to the Future DeLorean is officially in the history books. The iconic movie car has been added to the National Historic Vehicle Register of Significant Automobiles. The car will be displayed in September on the National Mall outside of the Smithsonian Institution in recognition of its addition to the register.
All right, rightfully deserved. Thanks, Jen. Coming up next, from drug dealer to lawyer, thanks to a second chance.
It's Small Business Month, and Dell Technologies and Windows are celebrating your unstoppable drive. Save up to 45% on powerful PCs with Windows 10 Pro to work from anywhere. Plus top monitors and docks for the ultimate business setup, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right business tech, server, storage, and cloud solutions at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL for Small Business Month savings.
Glad you're with us. The first time Edward Martell stood in Judge Bruce Morrow's Wayne County courtroom in Michigan. He was a 27-year-old high school dropout with a lengthy rap sheet. It was 2005, and Mr. Martell had been out on bail when he was arrested in a drug sting. After pleading guilty to crack cocaine charges, Mr. Martell could have spent 20 years in prison, but the judge gave him 3 years probation and a challenge to return to court next time with an achievement. Well, a week and a half ago, Mr. Martell returned to Judge Morrow's courtroom, but to be sworn in as a lawyer.
The two had stayed in touch over the years. Mr. Martell says he went on to earn undergrad and law school degrees from the University of Detroit Mercy. He later got a clerkship in Washington, D.C. And Judge Morrow even made the 8-hour drive to D.C. to take Mr. Martell to lunch before driving back to Detroit. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.